Summer, the best time of year, usually doesn't come with a great deal. Soaring temperatures come with soaring prices. But what if there's another way? With IKEA, your summer plans can last longer than 2 weeks of vacation and be more affordable. Here, everyone can have lounge chair access, no reservations needed. From affordable outdoor furniture to stylish accessories, we have all the essentials you need to soak up summer in style, no matter the size of your space. Start planning a better summer with IKEA. It's your outdoor dreams inside your budget.
You're listening to a podcast from Washington Post Live, bringing the newsroom to you live.
Hello, and welcome to Washington Post Live. I'm Tara Parker Pope, editor of the Wellbeing Desk here at the Post. Today, I'm joined by Dr. Lisa Mosconi, a neuroscientist and best-selling author of the new book, The Menopause Brain. Dr. Mosconi, thank you so much for joining us at Washington Post Live.
Thank you so much for having me. It is such a pleasure to be here.
Well, it's really great to have you. I think this is such an important topic that affects so many people, and there's a lot of confusion. So I'd like to start by finding out what inspired you to write this book. How did you, you know, there's been a lot of books about menopause, but why did you think there needed to be a book called The Menopause Brain?
Well, for a number of reasons. In part, it's my research. I am a neuroscientist by training, and I lead the Alzheimer's Prevention Program at Weill Cornell Medicine in New York City, and we are actively studying the menopause brain, and especially in terms of the risks and the vulnerabilities that women experience as part and as a result of the menopause brain. And in part, because so many women have reached out to me to talk about their cognitive symptoms and their emotional symptoms and psychological symptoms during menopause, in part for brain fog, which is quite a concerning and widely overlooked symptom of menopause that can be so severe as to really trigger fears and concerns around early onset dementia for many women. And so I thought it would be wonderful to really take the research out of the lab and make it accessible and actionable to all women. And what better way than to write a book about it, which can reach many more women than I can possibly work directly with in my line of work and research.
So how do you define the menopause brain? How is it different than the teenage brain or the younger woman's brain? What is the menopause brain?
I love that question. It's not that different, actually, from a brain perspective. And I think this connection has been quite overlooked in women's health and in science and in medicine. But to start with the menopause brain, this is a brain that is in transition. It's a brain that is changing because menopause is actually a neuroendocrine transition, is a neuroendocrine transition state. This is the best definition that I came across for sure, which means that your brain, your neurological system, and your endocrine system, your hormonal system, are changing together as women undergo the transition. And this literally leads to a rewiring inside the brain, it leads to a remodeling that is important, is biologically clued. There's a reason for it, which is important, but at the same time, it may trigger vulnerabilities, which women experience as hot flashes, night sweats, insomnia, or disturbed sleep, anxiety, depression, the mood swings that people are familiar with, but also brain fog and memory lapses. This is the menopause brain, but when you look at the brain itself, the changes that women experience are actually not so different from the changes that women experience during puberty with the teen brain, and then even more so with pregnancy. We are all familiar with the mommy brain, and I believe that the menopause brain is a little bit of an extension of that. At all these transition states, at all these turning points in a woman's life, the brain goes through a remodeling that, again, there's a reason for this remodeling to happen, but it may lead to vulnerabilities and risks and also increased resilience and greater emotional strength, which I think is something that we really don't talk about in society, and we don't appreciate that enough.
You know, that really leads to my next question. The foreword of your book is written by Maria Shriver, and I just want to read an excerpt. She says, "Menopause is a function of the brain that plays havoc with a woman's body and her outlook on life. Indeed, all of these erratic emotions and symptoms can make a woman feel crazy if she is not reassured that they are normal." The first chapter in your book is called "You Are Not Crazy." So yes. Why has it been such a challenge, not just for women, but also for the medical community, to recognize that menopause is normal and that women are not crazy? These are real symptoms and real experiences they're having.
Oh, this is such a good question. And it really goes back to Darwin, the father of modern biology, who was the first one to weigh in on menopause and really characterize this phase of life as something that nature had not intended. And I remind everyone that Darwin was also, again, the father of modern biology and the person who said that women's brains were inherently inferior to men's brains, which remained the backbone of medicine and neuroscience for a really, really long time, until more recently, many more scientists started denouncing the fact that there is quite a strong neurosexism in research, where a lot of the research that was done in the past really aimed at proving Darwin right. The studies were built in such a way where scientists were testing the hypothesis that men's brains were actually better than women's brains, which is difficult to work with as a woman and as a scientist. And I think that led to something called bikini medicine, which is an interesting term describing how, from a medical perspective, still today, what makes a woman are those parts of the body that can fit under the bikini line. And it's basically a reflection of how historically medical professionals, but also many scientists, almost believed that women's brains were just like men's brains, just smaller and more complicated and more subject to hormonal fluctuations, and that they were just not worth studying. So if you consider this situation, that most research was really done on men or male animals, and that men don't go through menopause, then it's quite clear why we know so little about menopause and the impact on women's brain health. And I think it's also a combination of ageism and sexism and a little bit of a cultural attitude towards menopause that really leads us to focus on the downsides and not look at menopause as something that is actually helpful to women, at least from an evolutionary perspective.
So I think in your book you say that 3/4 of women experience brain symptoms during menopause. Is that right?
That's correct.
And you mentioned some of them. Can you just describe what those symptoms are?
Yeah.
Brain symptoms of menopause?
Sure. So the most common brain symptom of menopause is a hot flash. And many women don't realize that hot flashes are brain-derived symptoms. I've had so many patients come to us saying, there's something wrong with my skin, you know, or there's something wrong with my body temperature. And we're like, no, it's actually your brain. Hot flashes are legit neurological symptoms that come from the way that menopause changes women's brains and the way that hormonal fluctuations impact a very specific part of the brain called the hypothalamus, which is a gland that regulates body temperature. So hot flashes are the most common symptom. Over 75% of all women experience at least one as part of the transition to menopause. Mood changes are also very prevalent. Sleep disturbances are really very prevalent. More than 50% of perimenopausal and postmenopausal women report having sleep disturbances and insomnia. And brain fog and memory lapses are also really, really prevalent and very debilitating for many women.
I think it's helpful to hear that this is common and that it's normal. I think that the hardest thing for women is just being confused and having a doctor be dismissive Or just as you said, just kind of focus on, you know, below the bikini line versus the whole body experience that menopause is. Now, you, during our Women's Health Summit, you shared some slides that I found really fascinating and revealing. I think we're going to take a look at one of them, which I believe is a woman's brain. Two of them, before menopause and after menopause. Tell me what we're seeing in this before menopause brain. What do all these colors mean?
So this is the very first study that we did looking at the brain before and after menopause. And just for context, this study was published in 2017 and was the first brain imaging study looking at women's brains before and after menopause, which I find surprising as a woman. These scans are called positron emission tomography scans, or PET scans for short, PET. And we're looking at brain energy levels. So we use the tracer called fluorodeoxyglucose, which marks the way the glucose, the simple sugar, is taken up in the brain and burnt to make energy. So what we're looking at before menopause is a very healthy, very active looking brain, a very energized brain, where red and yellow colors, the brightest colors, mean high brain energy levels. And then the green shade is a lower brain energy level. And the blue inside the brain is fluid, which is perfectly normal. There has to be fluid inside the brain. So this was the brain scan of a woman who was 43 years old when she came in for the first time. And then we were able to repeat brain scans over time, which we do for all our participants. And we also got a picture of her brain right after the transition to menopause, just about 8 years later. And that's the brain to the right. And if you notice, the red color, there's a lot more yellow after menopause, and there's a lot more green. It's like the red turned yellow and the yellow turned green as she went through menopause. And quantitatively, that's about a 30% reduction in brain energy levels.
So these changes look pretty startling to somebody who's not, you know, a scientist like yourself. Should this be frightening to women? You know,
the red is gone.
You're losing a lot of that high energy. What does that mean? And what can I do to get it back?
This is not a terrible jump. So if you start from a high level of brain energy, a 30% change is obvious on the brain scans, but it's not a sign of a deficiency or a neurodegenerative process. This is a sign of menopause. It's something that happens to many women's brains, in our studies at least. This is pretty average. And what it says is a couple of things that I think are interesting and important. Number one, women are not making things up, right? We are basically validating what countless women have been saying for centuries, which is that menopause changes your brain. Many women can feel these changes in their brain energy levels, their biochemistry. They can actually experience the transition. So these concerns really should not be dismissed. I find that a lot of my research is basically about validating what women's experiences and making sure that people take them seriously. And then the other part of the puzzle is that this transition that the brain is going to is accompanied by changes in brain energy levels, changes in neuronal concentration, the gray matter changes, the connectivity changes, the biochemistry changes, blood flow changes. And this can lead to some of the symptoms of menopause, the brain symptoms that we're trying to alleviate for so many women. So this is important because now that we know what happens in the brain, we are in a better position to make sure that the treatments work and that maybe different solutions are being developed and found, which also take into account the physiology, the neurophysiology of menopause.
Is there any evidence that if you take hormones for menopause or you take SSRIs for hot flashes, does the brain scan change? Is there any change in what it looks like if you're treated for the symptoms of menopause?
There are some clinical trials that use brain scans to track the effects of hormone therapy after menopause. And these studies were done as part of the Women's Health Initiative, which, as I'm sure everybody's heard by now, was a little bit of a problematic study because the women were more than 10 years past the menopausal window. So the brain imaging studies show interesting results. They sort of show that if you start hormone therapy closer to the final menstrual period, then the effects of hormone therapy might be more beneficial. What I think is missing is an actual clinical trial done in women who are taking hormone therapy as during the transition, specifically as they are going through menopause. And we just started a clinical trial at Weill Cornell Medicine where we are testing a new type of estrogen, if you will. It's called a SERM, a selective estrogen receptor modulator. And we're doing brain scans before and after therapy in women who are perimenopausal and early postmenopausal who do have the symptoms of menopause, which is also really important because you take hormone therapy for the symptoms. You know, that's what you're supposed to do. And I'll let you know when we're done with the trial.
You know, for a long time, there was a theory based on the data out of the Nurses' Health study that taking hormones could delay dementia or prevent cognitive decline. And then I know they came with the Women's Health Initiative, and because of the way that study was structured, I think the findings were more inconclusive because it used a lot of older women. I'm curious, is there any new research happening now to look at the role of hormone therapy and maintaining women's brain health?
Yeah, our research, actually, we just had two papers published that are, to my knowledge, the largest meta-analysis so far. So we have two papers out. The first one, we looked at the effects of hormone therapy on dementia, on the rates of dementia and Alzheimer's disease. And the second one, we just came out last week, we're looking at hormone therapy for support of cognitive function during menopause. So can it support cognitive performance as women go through menopause? And the first study showed that timing of administration is indeed important. You need to start in midlife. And the best results, at least with all the data we have so far, are for estrogen-only therapy for women who had a hysterectomy and or oophorectomy, which is the surgical removal of the uterus and or the ovaries. In that case, by looking at all the evidence, all the data that's been published so far, there is a significant 32% risk reduction of Alzheimer's disease and all-cause dementia for those women. For women with a uterus who are taking an estrogen plus progesterone combination therapy or opposed therapy, there was also a reduced risk of Alzheimer's and dementia, but the effects were more variable. For some women, it seemed to be protective. In other studies, it wasn't as protective. So we really need to do more research, and hopefully we'll have clinical trials rather than observational research to really clarify what's happening. But I think there's enough research to justify doing more research, possibly done in a more modern way, if you will, with brain scans and biological markers of Alzheimer's in women, in midlife women who are taking hormone therapy for relief, menopausal hot flashes.
Well, that's good to hear. We're going to get to a few audience questions, but I wanted to ask you one question first, because I think it's so important that menopause is portrayed in a fairly negative light, and women feel fearful of menopause. What can we do, not just to reassure women, but to just reframe our view of menopause as a, you know, normal time? And maybe there's wisdom that comes with menopause. Maybe good things happen with menopause, but we don't have those conversations. So how do we change that conversation?
Yes, I think two things need to happen. The first one is that we need to use the right terminology for menopause. I hear this all the time. There are people who want to frame menopause as a disease, and women who want other people who want to frame it as just aging. And I think this is confusing to a lot of women because they feel caught up in this kind of battle between opposites that is not super helpful, because menopause is actually a neuroendocrine transition state. It's a unique category of biological events that do not need to be compared to a disease or healthy or not healthy chronological aging. It's a very specific biological category of neuroendocrine transitions where the brain and the reproductive system are changing at the same time. And these include puberty, pregnancy, and perimenopause, which is the transition to menopause. And if you think about it that way, it's a lot less alien, it's a lot less foreign, because you had a preview as we were going to puberty. And then for women who have children, every time a woman gets pregnant, there's a similar transition happening in the brain. So during puberty, we all know that body temperature regulation changes, right? Usually teenagers are sweaty or right. They do experience changes in sleep and mood and cognition. They're brain fogged effectively quite often. And the same thing happens with pregnancy. The mommy brain is a foggy brain as well for some women. And there's a risk of depressive symptoms, as we all know, because it's the same system that is changing every time there's a transition state. So this is important to know. And the other part of the puzzle is that menopause actually, number one, is biologically programmed as opposed to just aging. There's a reason that it happens. And when it does happen, yes, there's vulnerabilities, there are symptoms. Menopause is no walk in the park by any mean. But then there's also resilience. We need to realize and appreciate that our brains, as women, have the capacity to adapt to menopause and carry on. And after menopause, our brains actually become better interconnected, seem to become better interconnected in terms of very specific brain regions that support emotional regulation and a theory of mind, with the results that after menopause, women develop greater empathy, which I think is a wonderful gift. And also life contentment appears to increase after menopause and remain fairly high in the years following, to the point that some women report actually feeling happier after menopause than they themselves were before menopause. And there's also greater hormonal balance after menopause that leads to better emotional regulation. So I mean, this is a forward to.
I'm sorry to interrupt. It's a very encouraging message, and I hope more women can get that. The resiliency of menopause and the empathy of menopause and the contentment of menopause are all good messages. I want to get to a couple audience questions. We have a question from Washington Post contributing columnist Dr. Tricia Pasricha. What role does the environment play in menopause and its impact on the brain? Does the data give us clues to practical steps that women can take to have better outcomes, even proactively, before the transition? What can you tell me about that?
Yes, that's a wonderful question. So I've done a lot of research on this because I am not in menopause. I'm actually premenopausal. So I really want to be prepared. I want to do everything I can to make my own transition as smooth as it can possibly be. And it looks like from a lifestyle and environmental perspective, there are a few things that all women can do to support their hormonal health and their brain health beyond and after menopause, throughout their menopausal transition. And the key practices are exercise, which has been shown time and time again to have a good effect on the hot flashes and the brain fog and mood and sleep, also stress levels, which tend to increase with menopause. And then diet, a healthy diet rich in fiber and antioxidants, has been shown to be associated with a later onset of menopause and fewer symptoms in many women. Sleep, I know that's difficult, but practicing sleep hygiene can also be helpful in trying to avoid stimulants like alcohol and caffeine. Seems to be really helpful for many women. Stress reduction is really important because stress hormones work in balance with sex hormones. So if your body needs to make a lot of stress hormones because you are under a lot of stress, it needs to downregulate the production of sex hormones because they're in balance, right? But if you can reduce the stress in your life and bring it down, then the body has a chance to start making more hormones, which obviously is helpful during menopause. And then in avoiding environmental toxins is another important strategy. And so are regular medical checkups, because there are quite a few medical conditions that can worsen or aggravate the symptoms of menopause and also have a negative impact on brain health. And this would be insulin resistance, diabetes, obesity, cardiovascular disease, thyroid disease. So yeah, we need to go through that.
Yeah, so we only have a few minutes left, and I want to try to get to another audience question. This is from Julie. We've covered this territory a little bit, but I think we can still talk about how does hormone replacement therapy affect the brain during menopause? And I would just like to add, you know, what's your general advice? I mean, a lot of women are afraid of hormone therapy. A lot of doctors are reluctant to prescribe it. So knowing the role it plays with the brain and how it relieves symptoms, what's your advice to women about what hormones might do for their brain and for the rest of their symptoms?
So in 2022, the North American Menopause Society and many other professional societies issued updated recommendations when it comes to hormone therapy usage. And these recommendations are much more optimistic than in the past 20 years, I would say, or 10 years. So today, it is understood that for most women, most healthy women, younger than age 60 or within 10 years of their final menstrual period, hormone therapy for menopause, whether estrogen alone or estrogen and progesterone, is generally safe, and the benefits tend to outweigh the risks. This is real, almost verbatim from the recommendations of professional societies. Now, what hormone therapy is approved for is hot flashes and night sweats, prevention of osteoporosis, relief of genital urinary symptoms like recurrent UTIs and vaginal dryness. Also, it may help with sleep disturbances, especially when due to night sweats, hot flashes at night. It may help with mild depressive symptoms during perimenopause and postmenopause. And it's also being evaluated for other indications, like potentially for brain fog and low libido as well. It's also, it could be helpful for low libido as well. And these are currently approved indications.
Which means there's 2 minutes we have left. I'm sorry. You call this book a love letter to womanhood and a rallying cry for all women to embrace menopause without fear or embarrassment. What do you want women to take away from your book and from this research? What is your message?
My message is that menopause is a neurologically active state. It impacts your brain. You're right. You're not crazy. You're not losing your mind. It's not all in your head, even though it is. And it's important to know this, because it really empowers all women to stand up for themselves and not worry that they're losing their minds or that they're getting dementia. This is menopause. It does impact your brain. It's unfortunate that it does. It's unfortunate that we have the symptoms. But there are so many things that one can do to feel better. There are many solutions available to address the symptoms, while also embracing the fact that there is a biological reason for the brain to go through menopause, for your body to go through menopause, and that it's not the end in any way, shape, or form. So many women after menopause are still exceptionally productive, right? We may not be reproductive, but there's no reason to not be productive. And the average person spends, the average woman will spend over 30% of her life in a postmenopausal stage. So why not make the best of it?
I think that is a great note to end on, and a very hopeful note for so many women out there. Dr. Mosconi, thank you so much for joining us at Washington Post Live.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for listening. For more information on our upcoming programs, go to WashingtonPostLive.com.
Wayfair's biggest sale of the year is back. Get ready for Way Day. For 3 days only, May 4th through May 6th, you can get up to 80% off at Wayfair. Save on sofas and cookware, dining sets and rugs and beds, wall art, bar carts, floor lamps, ceiling fans, home decor, all things outdoor, and way more. Plus, everything ships free. Don't miss the sale to get up to 80% off everything home, even a garden gnome. Way Day starts May 4th. Head to Wayfair.com now to start filling your cart.
Wayfair, every style, every home.